announcements for today, just to remind everybody, homework number one is due Friday. Has everybody completed it? I had a schedule. Way on the ball. Not waiting to the last minute. Take that as a yes. Any questions on the homework? Concerns?
Yeah. Is there a format that you prefer to be submitted? Like just scanned
digital? Fine. Plan ahead enough to get a reasonable scan. The only thing I'll ask is, I haven't done Canvas before, like I said, but I've had digital submissions. Every now and then I'll get somebody's cell phone pictures in a dark room of yellow colored paper with the half shaded. Your grade on the assignment is in part reliant on the ability to read what you've done with a moderate amount of effort. I had those resources in the department, be able to scan it and get a good copy. Other than that, no, you don't need to, just because it's digital, type it up or anything as you would any other homework. Okay. But combine it all into some scanned PDF. You need to, on the second one, you need to end up with time domain solutions. You can do it however you like. Laplace is just a kind of mix and match pre-solved differential equations. That's fine to use if you want to. The only caveat there would be if you say something like, plugged in to MATLAB and said, I Laplace, and here's the answer. If you want to, by hand, use Laplace and use Laplace tables, fine. But as long as you're solving it. Any other questions? Okay, the other thing here, I'm just linking a website, a kind of tutorial that I put together in the past. It's on the Potential website, which is our graduate traineeship many of you know about. That gives some more information on power device design. And I've offhand mentioned a couple of these topics about how a Schottky diode is created and how a device needs to be taller to block more voltage, what the trade-offs are with resistance and capacitance. This goes into that in a lot more detail. If you're interested, that's a resource available to you. In the past, in this course, I've actually gone through a lot of that material based on feedback from previous students, decided to shuffle more of that out and get more into kind of calculations with the device as it is faster in the class. If you have interest, there's a lot more on it there. Okay, if nothing else, so we will hopefully finish up this example today, motivating example for the course. Last class, looking at our 12 to 48 volt boost converter, we replaced our PN power diode with a Schottky diode. The motivation of eliminating reverse recovery and increasing efficiency. We saw a 2% increase in efficiency, but we wanted a little bit more, so we went and looked at the switching transitions and simulations. Found that when the FET turns on, we have pretty low energy loss during this transition, looking at the waveforms, pretty low instantaneous power during these transitions. When the FET turns off, we see a fair amount of energy, this 1.3 microjoules going into the FET. And to understand that, we started talking about switching behaviors of MOSFETs, both kind of static characteristics and how those come into play to move between cutoff and deep triode region. We have to somehow traverse potentially going through things like active SAT, that's going to contribute to switching losses, those overlap losses. And then dynamically, we have stored charge. Typically for loss, we're looking at this CDS. For driving noise, we look at CGS and CGD. But each of these capacitances require being charged and discharged, and if we do that in a lossy manner, those are going to contribute switching type losses. So then we looked at really just how this drain-to-source capacitance is going to come into play during a switching transition of this boost converter. And we ended here, we looked at the FET turn off, and we'll look at the FET turn on in the next slide. So this was the FET turn off. We had our ideal waveforms in red and purple, and then in green, just a sketch of what it might look like now that we include this CDS capacitance and include no other parasitics other than CDS. Okay? So the MOSFET is ideal other than this capacitance, so it switches instantaneously. So right at this time, it's completely off, leaving us with this circuit. The diode is initially off, we just have an LC resonant circuit. So this transition becomes dictated by a first order resonant circuit, LNC. And the inductor current is going to resonate with the capacitor voltage. That resonance will end when the drain to source voltage of the MOSFET, the voltage on this cap, reaches the out, at which point the diode turns on, clamping this voltage, and I no longer have a resonant circuit. I just have VLV, the constant voltage on an inductor, back to my triangular current waveform. Okay. So during this process in transitioning VDS from zero to capital V, what I've done is I've put energy into that capacitor, right? This time here, I have EDS is 1/2 CDS capital V squared, which we calculated previously is 1.3 microjoules for our example application. And that's how much energy we saw going into those really two parallel capacitances in this simulation. That energy is not yet lost. That is stored in CDS. It's not yet lost. Figure out what happens to that energy, we need to look at the FET turn on transition, which we'll do on the next slide. So for the FET turn on, I'll again start with my ideal waveforms I use for colors. Okay. IL, I'm going to have the MOSFET turn on right here. So my ideal waveforms, my current would be sloping down when the diode is on and start sloping up once the FET turns on. IL, my ideal drain to source current of the MOSFET, IDS, would just be the inductor current when the FET is on. And then down here, my ideal VDS would be still at the output voltage when the FET turns on, drop down to zero. Those are all ideal, but what happens when I consider this capacitance? Okay. So continuing on from the previous, from the FET turn off, I've got energy stored in that capacitor. I've got 1/2 CV squared. As long as the voltage is V, I've got all that energy stored there. Then at this point, I turn on this MOSFET. And what I effectively do is I short out this capacitance. Right. I'm going to the extent that this is ideal, instantaneously go from an open to a very small on resistance. That'll short out the capacitance and all of that energy will just be dissipated right here. As this goes to our on, I'll get a big spike of current in this loop, dissipating all the energy in that cap. So if I label like this, I'm going to see relatively little change in the waveforms. What I may do here so that we can actually see this happening is I'm going to change, and for the moment I'm going to call IDS this. I'm going to connect CDS up above it. Just redraw here. And I'll call this IDS of the channel, the actual MOSFET. So I'm doing this just so I can see what happens on these waveforms, see some difference. If I actually label up here, I talk about the real measurable external drain to source current of the MOSFET, I won't see any of this. This circulating current pathway is all internal to the MOSFET, and my current waveforms won't change significantly. Okay. I'm going to label it here. And yes, and sketch what will happen then. So if I label it there, this internal current, what's going to happen? Okay, nothing before the FET turns on. I've got zero current. Then as soon as the FET turns on, it's going to take the inductor current as it did before, but it's also going to have this big spike from discharging this MOSFET. So I'm going to see that current overshoot up to IL plus V over R initially. This is the voltage of V. I make this resistance and go way up. And then that current is going to decay exponentially as I discharge this capacitance down to the inductor current. We'll see some big spike. And then this. Eventually it'll level out, just go to the inductor current. This is channel current, internal CDS current included. Okay. And what's going to happen here in the voltage, I'll see a similar exponential drop as I turn on. Discharging this capacitance will have some RC dynamics associated with it. Time constant dictated by capacitance and on resistance. So by doing this, all EDS is equal to 1/2 CDS V squared, energy stored in the cap, is dissipated. In the FET during this turn on transition. So it was stored in the turn off, dissipated in the turn on. Okay. So what was really the difference in these two transitions? So here I stored energy, but I didn't dissipate any energy. And it was because I charged this thing in a resonant manner. I charged through an inductor rather than through a resistor. Okay. When I discharge, I'm discharging through a resistor, my equivalent circuit. When I just care about CDS, it's just this. So when I bring the voltage down, I'm doing so by dissipating all that energy. When I charge it, I'm doing so in a resonant manner, bringing energy from the source into that cap. This was a resistor instead of an inductor. When I charge it up, I'd lose an equal amount of energy to what I put into the cap. So the question becomes, can I do anything differently? Here I stored energy but didn't dissipate it. I was able to put that energy in without losses. Can I get it back out instead of dissipating it by turning on the switch? Okay. And I can do so really the dual of the way I did this, right? So I did this by having a positive inductor current when I shut off the MOSFET that causes that current to go into CDS and bring its voltage up. If I can make this inductor current negative, I can pull all that energy back out, drop this voltage back down to zero. And if I can find a way in my circuit to do that, then I can, before I turn on the MOSFET, get this voltage down to zero so that there's no longer any energy stored in that capacitor. Then when I turn on the MOSFET, it'll be shorting out a zero volt capacitor and dissipate zero energy. In order to do that, what I'm saying is just before this FET turns on, I need the inductor current to be zero. So that's going to look like, well, operating this boost in a different mode, something where the inductor current hits zero every period. Look at DCM, right? Operating the discontinuous conduction mode, the inductor current is hitting zero every period. So if I switch over to DCM, my inductor current would do something like allow much higher ripple. And at some point before the FET turns on, it hits zero. Okay. So what happens then? That current during this interval is going through the diode. The inductor current drops down to zero. The diode shuts off. Then I end up back with my same resonant circuit. The diode is off. The MOSFET is off. So I have this same LC, same input voltage source. One difference is I have a different initial condition. Here, my initial condition was some big current in the inductor, zero voltage on the capacitor. Now I'm going to begin this resonant circuit with zero current in the inductor, some big voltage on the capacitor. Yeah. Yes, and I mentioned briefly last time, so the capacitance of this diode would come into play in the exact same way. I'm neglecting it here for two reasons. One, just practical simplicity, but also because in the example I'm showing, this capacitance is way smaller than this capacitance. It's going to correspond better to the waveforms we see. This one is some tens of times larger than this one. So if the current splits between these two caps, it's going to go mostly into the big cap. Okay. Effectively, if I wanted to consider that diode capacitance, from a signal perspective, it's in parallel. So I could just make this capacitance a little bit larger because C out is huge. It creates a DC bus. So this is a capacitance between a switch node and a DC node. This is a capacitance between switch node and a DC node. From an AC perspective, they're just in parallel. Okay, so when I hit zero, I go back to a circuit that looks like VG, L, and I'm going to stick with my simplification and just say this is CDS. But I begin with IL of zero, call this T is equal to zero. The moment this resonant circuit is in play, when the circuit actually, my converter actually looks like this, zero, VDS of zero is V. Again, I can look at what's going to happen here. Initially, it's the boost converter. So V is greater than VG, which means I've got a negative VL, which is going to cause the inductor current to continue decreasing. And then I have zero current, so initially the CDS is going to have no change. The inductor current goes negative, it's going to start coming down. So what that's going to look like is I'm going to initially go more negative with the inductor current, and it's going to resonate back up as the voltage transitions from V down to zero in a resonant manner. If I can do this right, if all the conditions are right, I can have this resonance get the voltage all the way from V to zero. What I've done is I've pulled all that energy out of the cap before the FET turns on, taken that energy and sent it back to the inductor and the input source. And now, at this time, when I turn the FET on, the cap has zero energy, nothing's dissipated, no energy loss associated with that. And this detail is one that we neglect the first time we introduce DCM, right? Say the inductor current is zero and then stays zero until you turn the MOSFET on again. If this capacitance isn't there, that's true. It becomes just an open, the inductor current stays at zero. Once you consider this capacitance, you'll have this resonant flip going a little bit negative. Questions on that? Okay, so let's see if we can do that in simulation. Now I'm going to run this same boost converter in DCM. I'm calling this soft switching. An intro to the term, soft switching is ways in which we change the converter operates so that our switching transitions are less lossy or less noisy. This is particular a type of soft switching known as ZVS, which is zero voltage switching. Which, as the name implies, is really looking at the capacitance across this MOSFET, and I want that voltage to be zero before the MOSFET turns on so that I don't lose all that energy. That's zero voltage switching, really about the turn on, right before it turns on. Make that voltage zero. Okay, so the top two rows here are my previous simulations, the PN diode and the Schottky diode. Bottom one, what I've done is decreased the inductance significantly to allow 100% current ripple to put me in DCM. By doing that and nothing else, just decreasing the inductance, I jump from 95.8 to 98.2, about another 2% efficiency increase. Right. So we have a look at the waveforms. They look more or less as predicted. My MOSFET and diode currents look somewhat like ideal DCM, right on the boundary of DCM. The only difference being this little blip here where things go negative just prior to the MOSFET turn on. Okay. Inductor current, it looks like a triangle wave, but slightly goes slightly negative, and it has now 100% current ripple. Okay. So I look closely at the MOSFET turn off transition. Here, the gate goes low. After some delay, my voltage begins to rise. I again see during the process of bringing the MOSFET voltage from 0 to 48, 1.3 microjoules get stored in that capacitance area here. Sits in that capacitance through the time that the MOSFET is off. And then during the turn-on transition, now what I see is the inductor current goes negative. Once it begins going negative, diode shuts off. I allow resonance between this CDS capacitance and the inductor current, or the current going through the MOSFET. What that does is pulls that energy back out. So when I look at the energy by multiplying the drain to source current and drain to source capacitance, I see 1 microjoule come back out of there, a negative 1 microjoule. With 1.3 in, I got 1.03 back out. I still dissipated a little bit of energy, but I pulled out almost all the energy of that capacitance. Switch node voltage goes all the way to zero before I turn on the device. So great, I've significantly reduced the switching loss. That's what allowed me to get to higher efficiency. But that also allows me some freedom in the design of this, where because I have now very low switching loss, I can do things like go to a much higher switching frequency. There's just waveforms showing a 5 times increase in switching frequency up to 1 megahertz. You know, the waveforms look very similar because I have a higher switching frequency. This dynamic, this resonance, is dictated by L and C, and that stays constant, takes the same amount of time. Now I'm switching faster, so I have less overall time in the period. So you'll see here it's kind of a tiny little portion of the period as I go up to higher frequency. Now taking a more significant portion of the period, I try to go to 10 megahertz. It will spend almost the entire period in this resonant interval. That eventually, at high enough switching frequency, has a pretty significant impact on my operation, because during this, not connected to the output, I'm not supplying any power. It's going to adjust. It's going to make it harder to get power through within the period, make me need larger RMS currents for the same amount of output power. Right. Here, just a zoomed in waveform showing this nice resonant transition during the MOSFET turn on. Voltage resonates down to zero before the gate goes high. This, though, is really a special case where everything works out just beautifully because I'm right on the boundary of DCM. And I can only have these beautiful waveforms when I operate in a way where, okay, I turn on my FET, turn off my FET, allow exactly this resonance to happen, spend exactly the amount of time it takes for V-switch to get from 48 down to zero, and then turn back on the FET. This happens at exactly 1 power for a combination of voltages. If I start trying to change the power, for example, look at lower power operations, I'm not going to have this nice waveform. Now I'll have my resonant circuit. I'll bring the voltage down to zero, but then I'm not ready to turn on the MOSFET. I want a lower duty cycle. I'm going to keep the FET off. This resonant circuit is going to keep ringing afterwards. And that's shown on the next slide, please. So this is down at output power of 1 watt. And at 1 watt, my efficiency is 68%. So what happens, you turn off the MOSFET, store energy in the capacitor, inductor current goes to zero, and I begin this resonance, and I have this nice transition. So my current goes negative, I have a nice resonant transition of the switch node voltage down to zero. But I'm not going to turn on the FET until here. So it actually continues, tries to continue decreasing. That dVdt is still negative on the capacitor. It hits zero. It wants to keep going. It goes down until it turns on the body diode of the MOSFET. Body diode turning on clamps the inductor voltage, causes it to ramp back up, but dissipates energy because that current's going through a forward voltage of the body diode. Dissipates enough energy out of the inductor until I can get to the point where I can ring in between 48 and 0 volts. If I try to go below 0, the body diode turns on. If I try to go above 48, the Schottky diode turns on. After dissipating some energy, I can just get a steady state ringing in between those bounds. I ring out for the entire period until right here, where I turn the FET on again. And unfortunately, just due to the duty cycle, I needed to regulate the output voltage. This happens when I have fairly high voltage on that capacitor. Again, I'll have 1 half CV squared energy stored in it, and I dissipate all of that. If I wanted to go to a slightly higher voltage, I'd time out my duty cycle so that instead of this being my MOSFET on time, it was this, and I turned on right at the valley here, I would not dissipate any energy when I turn on. That cap would be at 0 volts. If I turn on at any of these valley points, there'll be 0 energy in that capacitor. My efficiency will get a bit higher. But duty cycle is dictated by what I need the output voltage to be, by regulation, right? So I end up, again, even though I've gone into DCM, having significant capacitive loss. I also potentially have issues with EMI doing this due to this sustained high frequency ringing. May have regulation issues. This noise may couple into my sensing circuits. It may be difficult to operate like this. Okay. Here the FET and the diode are off during this whole ringing interval. Okay. One way to solve this is to not have all of my switching timing, my output power, my regulation entirely dictated by when the diode turns on and off. Give myself some control over that. That leads towards a synchronous implementation. Yeah.
What's the most commonly used method to detect the timeout?
Well, so it depends on what you can do there. There are ways to not have to solve this problem. Like we'll look at next with synchronous operation, but you don't have to do that. This problem that I mentioned, trying to switch exactly at these valleys, so is a commonly employed technique, largely in the flyback converter, where you see something similar. When you operate a flyback converter in DCM, most of the low-cost chargers for phones plug into the wall are going to be a flyback running in DCM that inherently gives some benefits in terms of stepping down with small size and small power. It has the same type of ringing, and they will actually do this valley switching where they try to only switch at these times. That limits you to specific duty cycles, and then period to period, you may have to change which one. So get my regulation by saying for 2 periods, I'll switch here, then for 1 period, I'll switch here. On average, that'll give me the correct output voltage. May need a big cap. Now I'm going to have ripple at 1/3 the switching frequency. Method for detecting that can vary. Depends on how fast this resonance is. This is relatively low frequency. You can actually just run a comparator and say, okay, when it hits 0, turn on. Some gating signal to tell me which one to do. I can run model base, or I can do inference-based methods, where I say, switch at 4 microseconds, figure out what my efficiency is, what my losses are, or how much noise is generated from that. If it was bad, change timing. If it was good, do something else. Or if it was good, stay there, excuse me. So there are a number of methods to do that. There are lots of, like I said, available commercial solutions. If you have a 5-watt phone charger that plugs into the wall, probably a flyback, and many of them will, if they care about efficiency, use valley switching to improve. So there are commercial ICs that will handle this. They can go into valley switching mode, recognize this, and switch at the right time. Can that answer your question?
Yes, but we also need to consider the turn-on delay.
And that's why I say depends on the frequency of this. If this is ringing out at a few hundred kilohertz, and probably when this hits 0 or maybe a threshold above 0, actually as that happens, tell the MOSFET to switch, you've got a turn-on delay of 100 nanoseconds, and you're still pretty close to 0. If this is ringing out at 3 megahertz, and you say, when it hits zero, you tell the MOSFET to switch and it's delayed by a few hundred nanoseconds, you could be actually switching way up here. Then you have to think about either calibrating the system inside of model-based or feed-forward type mechanism for that.
So can we parallel or capacitor between the MOSFET to make the resistance and
no-fit? Sure. You see an example in a moment? Not for that explicit purpose, but yeah, absolutely. So once you are getting all the energy back out of that capacitance, you can potentially add more capacitance if it's advantageous to do so. If you are not doing this soft switching, adding drain to source capacitance is a terrible idea for a MOSFET. Once you are soft switching, can be advantageous. Always comes with drawbacks though. So let's look at synchronous operation real quick, and then we'll show an example of that. So here, what I've done is I've replaced that Schottky diode with a FET. Here I just use one rather than two in parallel. Let's see. This was I added my 1 megahertz operation to the table here. I do want to comment. AC. Some reduction in efficiency. I went from 98.4 to 98.2, still with the diode, by doing a 5x increase in switching frequency. But because I reduced those switching losses so much, it's a relatively small hit in efficiency from going 200 kilohertz up to 1 megahertz. And I had to rescale my passives to keep the same power, keep the same operation. Okay. Then this one at the bottom is taking that same operation at 1 megahertz and adding a MOSFET rather than a diode. That gets rid of some additional conduction losses and it'll give me control so I can go to low power without all this ringing. Getting rid of that forward voltage on the diode reduced a lot of my losses. I'm now at 99.6% efficiency. And at this point, I'm going to pause and comment on the realisticness of this simulation. Okay, so this, I've included no losses other than the ones that I'm talking about. Right? So I have no core loss in my inductor. I have no AC resistance, really no DC resistance in it even. So my losses are conduction loss in my switching devices and any switching losses that I have. Now I've explicitly designed it to get rid of those things. So my efficiency is going to be really high. If I actually built this one, practical, how I implement that inductor and capacitor, I'd never get 99.6. Or at least not without way more effort than I'm showing here in these slides. Okay. But that's okay. I'm really only using this to talk about the loss mechanisms and what happens to them. Yeah.
What was the output?
48 watts. Okay. All right. So adding this FET, I'm going to have smaller conduction losses. We've got 1 amp at the output instead of going through a few hundred millivolts. A forward voltage, it's going to go through a 10 milliohm resistance, have very small losses. If I run this simulation, now it looks pretty similar to what I had with the diode at 1 megahertz. You see the diode currents, I'm still calling it ID, it's now a MOSFET drain to source current for that diode like device. Now, it's not as true that I have all of my capacitance on the MOSFET and almost no capacitance on the diode because it's now a 2-to-1 ratio. So you see during this time, some of the current going up into that high side device. I'm going through the two parallel low side devices, but I still have this nice behavior. Resonant drop in VBS, turn on. When it hits zero, turn the high side device on and the voltage resonates up to 48 volts. I've got a little bit of a spike here. This is really, in this case, just me not spending enough time tweaking the timing of the turn on of that device. So a little more precise, I can get that to almost go away entirely. There's almost no energy in it though, as you can see from the efficiency. I probably, instead of turning on that high side device at 48, I turned it on at 48.2 or 47.8 somewhere. Just that little bit of energy causes a current spike because it's such a low resistance device. Um, here just zoomed in. This higher frequency, I can get both the turn on and turn off energies on a single plot. So when I look at my numbers, turn off the low side device, I see, again, much of energy going into it. That's my 1.3 microjoules. But then by allowing myself to operate in this DCM-like mode where the current goes negative, I get that energy back before I turn on the device. And one of the main advantages, in addition to getting rid of the diode conduction loss, why I motivated this is when I go to low power operation, I'm no longer limited by this diode. I no longer have to have this ringing out resonance. I can let the current keep going, keep almost my exact same waveforms, just shift down their average value to reduce the power. So here, waveforms look very similar. Difference is zero is here. So I'm allowing a lot of negative current, but to keep this nice operation where I've got one device on all the time and I've got resonant transitions with low loss on both edges of my switch node voltage. Again, P out is 1 watt. Here the efficiency is 91%. Again, with the caveat that this simulation is constructed to only include the losses that I'm talking about. It's real device models, but impractical models for some of the past developments. Okay. Drill in. If you took 482 with me, this is drilled into your mind by now. But if you haven't, sometimes people are confused. So a MOSFET is fundamentally a bidirectional current device, right? It's got a body diode, so current can always go source to drain. But if the gate to source voltage is high, it conducts like a MOSFET in the negative direction. When you have that gate to source voltage above threshold, it doesn't matter which direction current goes, these are on either way. By going from a diode to a MOSFET, that allows me to keep the current going negative, keep the device on, keep ramping down, instead of having to shut both devices off and let the current ring out. Okay, then the last one I'm going to mention just briefly will probably look a little foreign, but this is now a, it's called a quasi-resonant implementation of this boost converter. And what I've done there is put a resonant inductor in series with my device and a resonant capacitance in parallel with my MOSFET. And I'm showing results with back to the Schottky diode and with the synchronous implementation. So I added, in addition to my original inductor, some small additional CR and LR. And that allows me to get up to 99.96% efficiency. More caveats of, okay, this is simulation and I'm not including a lot of other loss mechanisms. Okay. This is what's known as the ZVS QR boost, where ZVS is our zero voltage switching that I mentioned, and QR is called quasi-resonant. So these two modifications I've made, if I haven't analyzed them and done them very carefully, and I have based on the efficiency, these are both terrible ideas, right? Putting a bunch of inductance in series with your switching device and a bunch of capacitance in parallel with it. Those aren't designed exactly right. That's just going to cause a ton of overshoot voltage, a ton of ringing, blow up the device, cause a ton of loss. Some of those characteristics will actually still be true, but if I design the resonance of this just right, so that during the conduction, during the off time of this MOSFET, I get basically a half period of resonance. That'll allow me to take this voltage from zero up, back down. Average volt second supplied during that time will be equal to VG, so my inductor current's happy. I can do this whole switching transition instead of a square wave as a resonant transition. Okay, that's shown on the next slide. So my diode current has this really half wave of resonance. My MOSFET drain to source voltage resonates up and back down. My MOSFET current has components of this resonance as well as the inductor current. So the input current from the inductor is still just a normal, more or less triangle wave shown here. And that gets superimposed on some of this resonant current. So this one I expect looks a little more foreign. We'll go through analysis and design of this thing later in the course. Really nice thing about it though, is I get these nice resonant waveforms where during both turn on and turn off of my MOSFET, everything's centered around zero. I don't have voltages increasing or decreasing very slowly. Even if my gate drive is a little slow, voltage on the MOSFET doesn't increase very quickly. My gate drive takes some time. No, that's okay. I can switch a little slower. It allows me to get to very high frequency. Trade-off is I got a lot of stress in this thing now. You see my drain to source voltage on the MOSFET for this 48-volt output current, 48-volt output converter going up to 120 volts, dictated by the resonance, not by the input or output voltage. It's ringing way up. Same thing with currents. My diode current is 1 amp average. It's ringing up to 9 amps. Go up to 4 amps in a typical PWM converter, even higher peak here. So I have to be able to deal with that. Because in this simulation, I have FETs that don't have any sort of issue with that, don't have any non-linearities with voltage or current. Doesn't matter here. Doesn't impact things. I can still get a high efficiency number. Again, perhaps a practical consideration while I can build this. Okay. So, a lot of what we're going to look at in this class is going to be built on the analysis of resonant circuits. We saw in this quasi-resonant boost, circuit was resonant during an entire period, entire subinterval, entire time the MOSFET is off of operation. Okay. Reason we call that quasi-resonant, because it's not full resonant. We'll look at full resonant converters where during the entire period everything is resonating. Quasi-resonant part of the period, one kind of switching interval, and then things like this, soft switching, or sometimes called quasi-square wave converters, where I have resonance just during the time that I'm switching. So when the MOSFET's on and when the MOSFET's off during the majority of the interval, I'm not resonant, only during the switching time itself. Look at all three cases throughout the course. But all three, some of the main differences from traditional converters is going to be that we're going to look at and analyze resonant circuits. Here, I just want to quickly look at the differences between analysis of a resonant circuit, what we've done in the past and intro to power electronics type courses, where we have something like this all the time, but simplify it significantly, right? This is the second half of a buck converter. They're more than comfortable working with circuits that look like this. Differences in something like ECE 4081. When you looked at this, you said IL is approximately capital IL DC, Vout approximately capital V DC, and that breaks us apart so it's no longer a resonant circuit. Fundamentally, it is. These simplifications make it so I don't have to worry about any LC resonance, right? When I look at the inductor, this is a voltage source, this is a voltage source. That's not a resonant circuit. When I look at the capacitor, this is a current source. No longer a resonant circuit. When just caring about net behavior of the PWM converters, that's enough to give me something that looks like the triangle wave inductor current I want. When I'm trying to design exactly how to recover this CDS energy, that's not a good way to look at this resonant circuit. Instead, we're going to have to look at the full characteristics of it. LC, DV squared, DL, T squared, plus L over R, dV out dt, plus V out minus V in is equal to zero. We'll look at the full second order differential equation and go through, solve that, find time domain voltages and currents, and then use that to dictate how we operate the converter. I want to turn on a switch when this voltage goes to exactly 48. That time, the way that we design L and C in order to achieve that are going to come from working with this. So you have some work on that in your first homework, and I expect that you've worked with differential equations, and if you really had to, could recall all that information and apply a little bit of it. But we will develop new techniques to work with this. They'll allow us to not spend the entire course just solving differential equations. We use something called state plane analysis that for first order resonant circuits will allow us to translate from differential equations into trig equations, plot things in a way that allow us to give some insight about the operation of this circuit just from sketching. Okay. Do that. Be out of time here. Well, here was just to look at exactly how this resonant circuit behaves and what segment of it we're looking at when we look at these switching transitions. I will save that for next class. We'll start there, conclude on the introductory example, and then jump into switching loss analysis. Okay. All right, thanks everyone.